Affairs at the Federation of Small Businesses said, "I think there's going to be terrible disruption in January," he added. "That will continue to be the case after a transition period ends, whether that's with a free trade agreement or otherwise."
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Chapter Ali Imran from the Holy Quran, verses number 29 and 30, recited by Saeed Maliki.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. قل إن تخفوا ما في صدوركم أو تبدوه يعلمه الله ويعلم ما في السماوات وما في الأرض والله على كل شيء قدير يوم تجد كل نفس ما عملت من خير محضرا وما عملت من سوء تود لو أن بينها وبينه أمدا بعيدا
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Say, whether you hide what is in your heart or manifest it, Allah knows it, and He knows whatever is in the heavens and whatever is in the earth, and Allah has power over all things. On the day that every soul shall find present what it has done of good and what it has done of evil, it shall wish that between it and that evil there were a long duration of time. And Allah makes you to be cautious of retribution from Himself, and Allah is compassionate to the servants.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Supporters of U.S. President Trump protesting the outcome of last month's presidential election clash with counter-protesters in Washington, D.C. Morocco's main Islamic groups reject Rabat's plan to normalize ties with Israel following a deal brokered by the U.S. Also ahead, hundreds of students are feared missing after gunmen attacked a secondary school in Nigeria's northwest. Welcome to the program. Our top story this hour, supporters of U.S. President Donald Trump protesting the outcome of last month's presidential election have clashed with counter-protesters in Washington, D.C. Take a look. Right-wing Proud Boys and left-wing Antifa faced off in downtown Washington after nightfall following a pro-Trump rally. At least one person was stabbed during the clashes, with police declaring them riots. The two groups shouted insults at one another and some set off fireworks. Officers made multiple arrests and used pepper spray to keep rival groups apart. Earlier, thousands hit the streets in Washington and other cities to protest what they call vote rigging. They accused President-elect Joe Biden of stealing the polls. Colin Campbell says U.S. President Trump is promoting street protests with misinformation about the country's electoral process.
This all comes down to is the misinformation that the U.S. electoral process was widely corrupted and flawed. This, of course, is an ideology or a concept that is constantly being promoted by the current U.S. President Donald Trump, even though there has been no evidence supporting these claims. This week, we saw a case being thrown out of a text out of the Supreme Court rejecting a case brought upon by the state of Texas trying to delegitimize the votes of several other states in their electoral and election results. So it would seem, without so many words, that the Trump administration is trying to overturn the will of many Black Americans in many of these states across the country. And yet still, you have many white aggrieved men who want Donald Trump to stay as president, who say that they don't want to see a presidency under the former vice president, now president-elect, Joe Biden. And that's why you've seen these protests storming in front of the White House and, of course, near Black Lives Matter Plaza.
Morocco's main Islamic groups have rejected Rabat's plan to normalize ties with Israel following a deal brokered by the United States, the religious branch of the co-ruling party PJB, in a statement called the move deplorable. The Unity and Reform Movement also denounced all attempts at normalization and what it called the Zionist infiltration. Unlike its government coalition partners who backed the deal, it took the PJB 2 days to react amid divisions among the party's senior leadership. On Friday, Morocco's major opposition party, Adlou El-Ihsan, condemned normalization deals with Israel and a stab in the back of the Palestinian cause. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has called for the formation of a unified front to counter Israel's demolition of homes in the occupied West Bank. The Hamas spokesman said the regime's demolition drive represents an all-out war on Palestinians, which needs to be countered by adopting a joint strategy. Hazem Qassem said a hike in razing Palestinians' homes shows that the regime is gradually implementing its annexation plans. He noted that the rise comes on the heels of U.S.-brokered normalization deals between Israel and a number of Arab states. According to the UN, over 50 buildings have been razed by Israeli forces over the past 2 weeks in the West Bank. Now, Israelis have held fresh demonstrations against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Jerusalem, Al-Quds. Protesters gathered outside Netanyahu's residence to condemn his policies and call for his resignation. The demonstration was held despite a ban on protests. Israelis have been staging street rallies over the past months to protest soaring unemployment, a hike in COVID-19 infections, and a return of coronavirus restrictions. Adding to anti-regime sentiments are the corruption charges facing the prime minister. Netanyahu went on trial back in May for bribery, fraud, and breach of trust, but he denies any wrongdoing. Another headline story this hour, bandits armed with rifles have attacked a secondary school in Nigeria's northwestern state of Katsina. Gunmen exchanged fire with police at the scene and wounded one officer. A number of students have gone missing following the attack late on Friday. Locals say hundreds are unaccounted for. Police say they are working with the army as well as the air force to determine the exact number. Armed bandits regularly attack locals in Katsina, kidnapping them for ransom. In the northeast of Nigeria, militant attacks are rampant. Last month, scores of farmers were killed, some of them beheaded in the state of Borno. That was blamed on Boko Haram terrorists. Now, the daughter of jailed Nigerian Muslim cleric Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki has slammed the world's silence on the armies and massacre of the Sheikh's supporters in 2015.
The atrocity of the Zaria massacre that occurred 5 years ago in 2015, it's not exactly necessarily an unheard of thing that an authority goes and kills people, but in our context, for us, it was certainly unprecedented. It is not necessarily surprising, but it's also at the same time quite disappointing that the world at large is mostly silent about what happened. More people decide that they do not want to necessarily speak about it, sadly, including Muslims.
Zakzaki's daughter said the Nigerian government has shown no remorse for its atrocities. She said the government has continued its crackdown against Nigeria's Islamic movement led by Sheikh Zakzaki. She was addressing an international ceremony held virtually on the fifth anniversary of the massacre of the Nigerian city of Zaria. United Nations Chief Antonio Guterres has called on world leaders to declare states of climate emergency in their countries.
If we don't change course, we may be headed for a catastrophic temperature rise of more than 3 degrees this century. Can anybody still deny that we are facing a dramatic emergency? That is why today I call on all leaders worldwide.
Guterres said if the world fails to change course, it may be headed for a catastrophic temperature rise of over 3 Celsius degrees this century. He was speaking at a summit on the fifth anniversary of the Paris Climate Accord that aims to tackle global warming. U.S. President-elect Joe Biden sent a written statement to the virtual summit. He pledged to rejoin the Paris Accord on the first day of his presidency. The U.S. withdrew from the International Accord in 2017 under incumbent President Trump. The country is the world's second largest polluter after China. Environmental activist Jody Great says wealth and prosperity mean nothing if the earth becomes uninhabitable.
Independence, success, consumerism, all those things are not going to mean a thing. When our world, as our world approaches being uninhabitable, it seems to me that we need to really get behind the groups and people who are working for it. Well, one of the problems, of course, is that both the Democrats and Republicans accept an awful lot of money from people who have a vested interest in doing things that are very bad for climate change. The oil industry, the military-industrial complex, big manufacturers, let's get our economy running. There is going to be a lot of push on Joe Biden to remember the basics.
French riot police have arrested nearly 150 demonstrators who were protesting against police violence and a controversial security bill in Paris. Hundreds of Parisians and press freedom activists took to the streets to protest against the bill. Police used water cannon to disperse the protesters. The bill would increase the government's surveillance tools and restricts rights on circulating images of police officers in the media and online. France has been hit by a wave of street protests after the government introduced the bill in parliament. The move is part of President Emmanuel Macron's drive to get tougher on law and order ahead of the 2022 elections. In a recent U-turn, Macron's ruling party said it would rewrite that article.
After the controversial law on global security and the massive protest against it, the French government has approved another controversial bill, this time called Law on Separatism, provoking again a popular protest. Prime Minister Castex openly said that this bill targets what he called radical Islam, enemy of the Republic. President Emmanuel Macron has promoted the bill to target separatists undermining the nation.
I have the impression that Islamophobia is an important electoral trading issue. I don't think that Marine Le Pen will win the elections, but to prevent that, the actual government is playing on the ground of the far right.
A rarely seen police cordon surrounded the demonstration entirely from the beginning till the end. Every 100 meters, the police charged the demonstration and made arrests. Some were wounded. Macron had said that the presumed radical black bloc has to be destroyed. Therefore, the police had clear orders, zero tolerance. However, this time, the violence did not come from the demonstrators. Human rights groups have raised concerns over the law, saying it would discriminate and stigmatize French Muslims.
There's so much ambiguity in the formulation of the bill that anyone can be accused of anything anytime. The head of police can't dissolve any association on any grounds. With this law, justice does not exist anymore. The democratic state does not exist anymore. Anyone who is a bit annoyed by Muslims can use this law in an arbitrary way. It has to be abolished, same as the law on global security.
The bill in question requires that everyone strictly respects the French Republican principles of secularism, whatever that might mean. The funding of Muslim associations and mosques will be closely monitored. The main association in defense of Muslims, the CCIF, was dissolved. All organizations will have to sign a declaration on secularism if they want to receive funds from the state. In case of non-compliance, they would have to refund the money. The new bill will be discussed in the French Parliament. Members of the majority party already declared that they want to modify the text. Some want to soften it, others want to make it even more restrictive. Chris Den Hont, Paris.
British ministers have reportedly warned supermarkets to stockpile food amid possibilities of a no-deal Brexit. According to the Sunday Times newspaper, the ministers have also told suppliers of medicine, medical devices, and vaccines to store enough for 6 weeks. The report says the government is concerned about possible shortages as talks with the European Union over a post-Brexit trade agreement remains deadlocked. Prime Minister Boris Johnson is also planning an exit operation committee in case of a no-deal scenario. Sunday night is the last deadline Johnson and President of the European Commission Ursula von der Leyen have set for hammering a trade deal. But both sides say an agreement is unlikely amid differences over key issues. Now, EU leaders agree that rebooting relations with the United States is essential to their aim of tackling pressing global challenges. At a summit in Brussels, the bloc's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, described ties between the EU and the U.S. during the Trump presidency as, quote-unquote, bumpy. Jerome Hughes reports.
Senior officials have told us, in the eyes of EU leaders, Donald Trump's credibility is now non-existent because of his refusal to concede the US presidential election. At their two-day summit in Brussels, which concluded on Friday, they adopted conclusions designed to reset relations with Washington.
We would like to further develop our partnership with the US in various sectors in the future. We want to stress the importance of multilateral cooperation on the international agenda. This is at the very core of the EU.
Critics say EU leaders lost a great deal of credibility themselves during the past 4 years over their failure to stand up to Trump. For example, what did they do when Trump tried to start trade wars, took the US out of the Paris Climate Agreement, withdrew funding for Palestinian refugees and supported Israel's illegal occupation program? And what about his rubbishing of the World Health Organization amid a global pandemic? Political scientists claim the weakness of EU leaders to challenge Trump makes them complicit. Arguably, the bloc's greatest foreign policy achievement, the Iran nuclear deal, was left to flounder as Trump did everything to try and destroy it at the behest of Israel, critics argue. If Joe Biden can save the accord agreed by world powers in 2015, there would be many plus sides, experts say.
I hope we can switch as soon as possible on the question of security through prosperity on Middle East. And this is, I feel, the dream of all the Middle East people.
The EU continues to express optimism about the Joe Biden administration, which is due to take office next month.
We hope that this is going to be a more positive one. It has been a bumpy road in the last years, and there is a lot of hope on the working between the European Union and the US.
Many analysts warn if EU leaders don't get tougher, populism will continue to flourish in the West, and they might be seeing Trump back in the White House in 4 years' time. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Number of coronavirus infections in the Netherlands has seen its biggest daily rise since October. According to official data, COVID cases in the Netherlands jumped by more than 9,000 over the past 24 hours, That raises the country's total infections to more than 600,000. The disease has so far claimed over 10,000 lives in the Netherlands. Also on Saturday, Italy's virus deaths jumped by nearly 650 to above 64,000. The country has now reclaimed the record from the UK for the highest number of coronavirus deaths across Europe. The continent has been struggling with a second wave of this disease for several weeks now. Earlier, Max Civili joined us with the latest on the coronavirus outbreak in his country, Italy.
The contagion rate has slowed, and also the number of new hospital admissions has been going down in recent weeks. But, as you said before, Italy is still reporting more daily COVID-19 fatalities than any other European nation. The obvious questions for many Italians are, has the country's healthcare system failed to protect the elderly? Has the government done all it was necessary to tackle the pandemic as it delayed imposing new restrictions? Bear in mind that the average age of Italian victims stands at around 80, and 6 out of 10 COVID-19 dead had 3 or more other health problems before they tested positive: hypertension, diabetes, lung issues. Germany, it has a similarly old demographic, and yet its death toll is 1/3 of Italy's. Despite its larger population of 83 million, it has 21,000 dead overall. So basically, Italy has to ask itself why Germany is doing much better.
Diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
On Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary, O possessor of pardon and good pleasure, from wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From Thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in Thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans. And I seek protection in Thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For Thou art Allah, the best guardian, and Thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before Thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with Thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to Thee, addressing myself to Thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to You for the hope of Your rewards. So, bless Muhammad, the best of Thy creation, the summoner to Thy truth. Exalt me with Thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with Thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but Thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely, Thou art the all-forgiving, the all-compassionate.
The limelight.
Despite the critical role played by healthy soil in improving food production, dominant patterns of agricultural intensification, including the overuse and misuse of pesticides and fertilizers, are major drivers of biodiversity loss, thus undermining the soil's potential contributions. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Kenny Stencil Ryder. This article is published under the heading, Few Things Matter More to Humans. UN report says we must protect and restore biodiversity of world soil. Here's the details of this article. Why nutritious diets, healthy populations, pollution, remediation, and even climate change mitigation all depend, at least in part, on soil biodiversity, society is not doing enough to protect the variety of life below ground. That's according to the Food and Agriculture Organization FAO of the United Nations, which published a new report on Friday, December 4th, on the state of knowledge of soil biodiversity in anticipation of World Soil Day this weekend. Soil biodiversity and sustainable soil management is a prerequisite for the achievement of many of the Sustainable Development Goals, said FAO Deputy Director General Maria Helena Semedo. Therefore, data and information on soil biodiversity from the national to the global level are necessary in order to efficiently plan management strategies on a subject that is still poorly known. The loss of above-ground biodiversity is a well-understood problem, researchers say. But the loss of biodiversity beneath our feet is equally important and a crisis on par with the climate emergency, considering how soil forms the basis for food production, medical breakthroughs, carbon retention, and thus the foundation for human well-being.
The report compiled by 300 scientists notes that soil is home to more than 25% of the world's biological diversity and more than 40% of living organisms in terrestrial ecosystems are connected to soils during their life cycle. Biodiverse organisms in the soil are essential to the creation and maintenance of the conditions for sustainable agri-food systems, researchers pointed out. Few things matter more to humans than the vast reservoir of biodiversity living in the soil that is out of sight and is generally out of mind. Richard Barget, a professor at the University of Manchester and a lead author of the report, told The Guardian. Despite the critical role played by healthy soil in improving food production, dominant patterns of agricultural intensification, including the overuse and misuse of pesticides and fertilizers, are major drivers of biodiversity loss, thus undermining soil's potential contributions. People should be worried about the loss of topsoil through bad treatment and then erosion, said Nico Eisenhower, a professor at Leipzig University and another lead author of the report. Scientists describe soils as like the skin of the living world, vital but thin and fragile, The Guardian reported on Friday, December 4th. It takes thousands of years for soils to form, meaning urgent protection and restoration of the soil that remain is needed. Soil biodiversity is essential to sustaining life on Earth, which is why we need to protect this precious resource, tweeted the FAO. Without biodiverse soil, ecosystems would cease to function, but the essential contributions of soil organisms are threatened by soil degrading practices such as deforestation, droughts, and wildfires. Monocropping and other intensive agricultural activities, as well as unsustainable forms of urbanization, the report says. For this reason, the FAO says that policies that minimize soil degradation and protect soil biodiversity should be a component of biodiversity protection at all levels. The report states, while above-ground biodiversity is familiar to most people and its protection is managed under national and global laws and regulations, there are a few comparable activities that focus on the protection of soil biodiversity. Protecting above-ground biodiversity is not always sufficient to protect soil biodiversity. Above-ground and below-ground biodiversity are shaped by different environmental drivers and are not necessarily linked to one another. Above and below ground biodiversity requires tailored protection, conservation, and restoration considerations because they are connected but at the same time very distinct. It's in humanity's best interest to promote soil health, researchers say, since it will shape the quality of our future. According to the report, soil organisms could help mitigate climate change by sequestering carbon, absorbing and therefore reducing the emission of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. The most important action is to protect existing healthy soils from damage, The Guardian reported. While degraded soils can be restored by growing a diverse range of plants. To enhance soil biodiversity, the adoption of sustainable management and restoration practices in agricultural and urban setting needs to be scaled up, the FAO stressed. If things carry on as they are, the outlook is bleak, unquestionably, Barget warned. But I think it's not too late to introduce measures now.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Iranian military scientist Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh was assassinated near Tehran. Who are the actors or state actors with the means and the motives necessary to carry out such a terrorist attack? Let's take a look at what we know so far and examine the facts. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique. Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh was a prominent nuclear scientist in Iran. He was a brigadier general in the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, also the deputy defense minister, and he headed the Organization for Defense Innovation and Research. On November 27th, he was assassinated in Absart, east of Tehran. The attack involved an explosion and a hail of machine gun bullets. The injuries were too grave for him to recover from, and he died shortly thereafter in hospital. The attack received widespread condemnation in Iran, and Iran's foreign minister, Javad Zarif, said the following: "Terrorists murdered an eminent Iranian scientist today. This cowardice, with serious indications of Israeli role, shows desperate warmongering of perpetrators. Iran calls on the international community, and especially the European Union, to end their shameful double standards and condemn this act of terror. After all, it's not unreasonable to assume that Israel had a hand in this. There are very, very, very few countries who not only possess the motives, but the capabilities and the means necessary to carry out such attacks. The indications of an Israeli role and motive are not that hard to see. The New York Times published an article saying that one American official, along with two other intelligence officials, said that Israel was behind the attack on the scientist. CNN also reported that a senior U.S. administration official said Israel was behind the assassination. While they don't give details about whether the U.S. had prior knowledge about this attack, after such assassinations, Israel's official policy is to neither confirm nor deny. However, let's take a look at what we do know. We know that Israel has for a long time opposed the Iran nuclear deal and accused Iran of having a covert nuclear weapons program. As a matter of fact, in 2018, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu named Dr. Fakhrizadeh personally in a presentation. He said, remember that name, as if he were issuing some sort of veiled threat.
This is how Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, head of Project Ahmad, put it. Remember that name, Fakhrizadeh.
We also know for a fact that the Israeli intelligence services, the Mossad, have had a targeted assassination program for a long time. In the Mossad, they have the Caesarea unit, which deploys agents in foreign countries, giving them deep covers for extended periods of time. And within the Caesarea unit, they have the Kidon, which carries out such targeted assassinations. Between 2010 and 2012, at least 4 nuclear scientists were assassinated in Iran by the Mossad. Even going all the way back to the 60s, Israel was assassinating German scientists in Egypt who are working on Egypt's ballistic missile program. So this is well within their capabilities and very typical of their MO. We also know that the United States, in a brazen act of terrorism, assassinated General Qasem Soleimani earlier this year. Israel and the United States partnered together to work on the Stuxnet virus to try and sabotage Iran's nuclear centrifuges. Also during the same period when they carried out these assassinations between 2010 and 2012. Earlier this year, we also had another act of sabotage at the same facility. So there's been a clear, concerted effort here by the U.S. and Israel to kill, to assassinate, to terrorize members of Iran's military establishment and energy sector. This is not a secret. Despite Israel's claims that Iran has a secret nuclear weapons program, there's no proof of this. The International Atomic Energy Agency, the UN's nuclear watchdog, has never substantiated that claim and has had unprecedented access to Iran's nuclear sites that no other country has given the agency. So what could the possible motives be behind this attack, other than political, perhaps? To find out more, I'm joined by Sayyid Mohammad Marendi, who is a professor of English literature and Orientalism at the University of Tehran. Thank you for joining me, Professor.
Hi, Richard. Thank you for having me.
Professor, we're hearing various opinions that this assassination was perhaps meant to sabotage the incoming Biden administration from re-entering the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal. And we're also hearing another opinion that perhaps this was meant to provoke Iran into an all-out conflict or confrontation so that Israel could directly strike within Iran. What are your thoughts on these ideas?
I don't really think an all-out war is a realistic scenario. Iran is too powerful, and it has too many powerful allies across the region. And the United States has been weakened over the past few years. This is not the United States of September 11, 2001. It's a completely different world, and the United States is a very different country. I do think that it may be an attempt to sabotage Biden's own attempts to become the anti-Trump, although I'm highly skeptical that Biden will ever fully implement the nuclear deal. Obama never did, so I don't see how Biden would do it. But he may take some steps to show himself to be more reasonable. It may also be an attempt to strike at Iranian targets in the hope that Iran won't retaliate because of the argument that Iran would want to wait to see Trump leave office and thus they would not respond so as to not rock the boat. So some could look at it from this perspective, that the Israeli regime wants to be provocative to see how much it can get away with. But I don't really know. I don't know what goes on in the mind of Netanyahu, because Netanyahu over the last few years has been, his fundamental concern has been staying out of prison.
We often hear this argument that perhaps Israel is, or Netanyahu at least, is trying to get away with as much as possible before Trump's tenure is over and he leaves office next month in January. But I feel like people forget that during the Obama years, when Biden was vice president, you had 4 Iranian scientists assassinated by the Mossad with U.S. knowledge, and the Stuxnet virus. I mean, they're always hawkish towards the Middle East, towards Iran.
Well, you raise a very important point, and that is that under Obama and, by extension, Biden, the Israeli regime murdered 4 Iranian scientists on separate occasions. And all of these attacks and all of these murders were carried out with American logistical support. The Israeli regime does not have the capability to carry out operations in Iran. The United States has embassies in neighboring countries. They have military bases all around Iran. And they are funding the MEK terrorist organization, which has offices across Europe and North America, and their main military camp is in Albania. So the Israeli regime is using the logistical support and this terrorist organization that's at the disposal of the U.S. government and, by extension, again, the Israeli regime. So what happened during Obama has happened again during Trump. There's no main real difference. In fact, I would also add that while Trump murdered General Soleimani, the person who was key to defeating ISIS in Iraq and Syria, Obama created the dirty war in Syria with the Turkish president, the Saudi king, other oil-rich dictatorships in the region, and the Israelis, and of course the Europeans. So, or for example, Obama helped bring about the genocide in Yemen because he destroyed Libya. So there's no real difference between the two when it comes to Iran or the region. Again, the maximum pressure campaign of Trump, he called it the brutal sanctions. But this whole notion of these sanctions that target Iran's banking sector and Iran's trading partners was initiated by Obama. He called them crippling sanctions. So while Obama wanted to cripple the Iranian people and help ruin the economy and have people die, Trump wanted to carry out what he called brutal sanctions, brutalize the Iranian people. The name is different, but the objective is the same. So there's no real difference between Biden and Obama and Trump. And we have to remember that Biden has already said that nothing will fundamentally change when he becomes president.
So, Professor, what do you think we can expect to see in terms of an Iranian response to this, diplomatically, militarily?
My belief is that the Iranians will ultimately strike the Israeli regime. It will be either a military strike, or it will be carried out through intelligence services, or maybe a combination of both. But I have no doubt that there will be a response. We've already seen that Parliament has approved a decreased cooperation with the International Atomic Energy Agency and a decreased commitment to the nuclear deal. Although there are differences between the Rouhani administration and Parliament over what has been passed, but there is a general consensus that pressure has to be put on the United States. What Parliament did today was that it approved of a certain series of things that the Iranian government has to do. The Iranian government has to increase enrichment to 20%. It has to increase the number of its new centrifuges, the IR-6 and IR-8, and another heavy water reactor has to be built. So there's a series of things that they've demanded from the government. There are some differences between the government and parliament about this. The government wants to tone it down a bit, especially with regards to IAEA inspectors and inspections and the additional protocol. But there is a consensus that there must be more pressure on the United States and the Europeans.
I just find it very interesting that we always hear like, oh, Iran is violating the deal, but they don't tell you in the news that these are responses to, you know, like acts of war.
The only reason why Iran is not been carrying out its commitments is because the other side wasn't carrying out its commitments. After the Americans and the Europeans stopped abiding by their commitments, the Iranians waited for a full year and continued to carry out all its commitments. In my opinion, they waited for too long. And then after waiting a year, they gradually, over five phases, decreased their commitments. And they're still abiding by some commitments as we speak. But yes, this is not what we hear in the Western media. Just like when this assassination, instead of calling it a terror attack, calling it an outrage, they try to explain, you know, or talk about how it was done, what effect this has, instead of calling it, for what it is.
Right. There's a real reluctance on the part of the Western media, Western governments, to call this out for what it is, a terrorist attack. And it's really indicative of their double standard. I mean, if this had happened in the West.
Exactly. They tried to imply that he was in charge of making nuclear weapons. So even over the last few years, where Iran was implementing the nuclear deal, and as we speak, the Iranians are abiding by the additional protocol. So the International Atomic Energy Agency has a huge amount of access in Iran. So obviously Iran is not developing a nuclear weapon. It never was, but in any case, it hasn't been for the last few years. That's obvious. But they still murdered him. So obviously, the murder had nothing to do with nuclear weapons. So, you know, whatever the Israeli regime does in Lebanon, in Syria, in Palestine, in Gaza, in Iran, and elsewhere, the Western media will try to present it in a way to make it seem justifiable, no matter how outrageous the atrocity is.
Thank you so much for your time, Professor. It's always a pleasure having you on.
Communique is a program in which Richard Medhurst, the independent journalist and political commentator, gives his views of controversial issues of our time and interviews famous politicians and personalities. This program is broadcast every Sunday by IRIB English Radio.
I think it goes without saying that this assassination of Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh is a clear, brazen violation of Iran's sovereignty. Just as the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani was also a clear violation of Iran's sovereignty and also tantamount to an act of war, a declaration of war. To take a deeper look, I'm joined by journalist and veteran war correspondent Elijah Manier. Thanks for joining me, Elijah.
Hello, Richard. Thank you for having me.
Elijah, I wanted to get your thoughts about the implications that this assassination has on the international stage. I believe you refer to it as entering the law of the jungle. Can you elaborate on the violations of international law?
Sure. Article 1 and 2 and 2.4 of the United Nations Security Council prevents any attack on sovereign states or any unlawful activity in a sovereign state. Also, it doesn't allow state to defend themselves without the agreement of the other states that is concerned. I will explain. So what the Israelis and the Americans have introduced repetitively with so many countries in the Middle East, they speak about a prevention of self-defense. And this prevention of self-defense, it means they envisage something could happen from a specific target and they're going to attack it. This is what Israel did with the Iraqi nuclear power. This is what Israel did with the Syrian nuclear, the building that was supposed to be built for a nuclear facility. And this is what Israel is doing all the time. And the Americans are also using the same excuse. And that is fully against the law and against the international law that all the United Nations agreed just after the Second World War. And it has been developed and updated. And it is just not acceptable by any international law that Israel or any other state can go and attack and kill a civilian, a non-combatant. And even if there is a question of killing a military or an objective, they need to ask the permission of the country that is hosting this person. They just can't take the law in their hands and then go and attack just like that and say, we've done it. This is what they've done with the Brigadier Qasem Soleimani, and this is what they have been doing all the time, starting just very recently from the Obama administration with all the hundreds of drones attacks to Trump, and will continue with it.
What are your thoughts on this new draft bill in the Mejlis, the Iranian parliament, as a response to this assassination and as a countermeasure to sanctions?
First of all, this decision of the parliament to suggest a law that comes difference from the general opinion and the wish of most leaders today. Before the downing of the U.S. drone over the Persian Gulf and the U.S. threat against Iran, there were a bit of internal domestic problems in Iran where people have different point of view. So by downing the drone and then by the reaction of the Americans in killing the General Qasem Soleimani, what the Americans have managed to do, they have brought the Iranian nation as one block together behind the government, behind the parliament, behind the leader of the revolution. And when the population understood that the U.S. is continuing with hard sanctions, sanctioning almost everything, then they stood by their leaders. And today, yesterday, the parliament, the decision of the parliament was to suggest to continue the enrichment, to raise it to a higher level, to bypass the 2015 agreement because it was violated by the U.S. first. That's very important to say it, because Iran did not violate the nuclear agreement that was signed by the five permanent members of the UN, and plus Germany, that European did not abide by their commitment, did not honor the international law, and accepted the sanction on Trump, even if verbally they said they are against it. So now the National Security Council of Iran accepted the suggestion of the parliament, and this is going to find its way, be implemented. However, the parliament bill is very clear. It is giving an additional 2 months for Biden to be in power and then act swiftly and immediately upon entering the White House. If he doesn't do that, then this bill will go forward and Iran will increase its enrichment, but will never, ever reach the nuclear military level because it is not interested in making the nuclear bomb. And that needs to be very clear. No international committee or inspection, there are no proof whatsoever that Iran is heading toward a nuclear military power. However, what the international community is trying to do is to put the missile program on the table, and that is against the 2015 nuclear agreement.
Right. So you don't expect the incoming Biden administration to be any less hawkish on Iran's ballistic missile program?
Well, any U.S. Administration follows first and above all the U.S. The Israeli will and the Israeli wishes and Israeli objectives. And it is on top of the Israeli and the Saudi agenda to put an end to the Iranian missile. And Joe Biden will confront that, and he would want to discuss the ballistic missile and precision missiles of the Iranian program. And Iran will not accept to discuss it because Iran never declared war on any country and is not ready to give up on the missiles that serve to defend the nation against the aggression of other countries or other states. We saw how President Trump attacked the Iranians by killing their general, who was a diplomat and an envoy to the Iraqi government, and how Iran responded with a missile by being so precise not to kill and destroy the entire base, but to send a clear message that all your bases are under our missile. This is why Iran will never give up on the missile program and will not discuss Iran's allies unless there is a general peace in the Middle East, where also Israel will have to deliver its nuclear weapons and will have to stop its aggression and violation of the sovereignty of other states, and that is Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon.
Why Dr. Fakhrizadeh? Why do you think he was targeted specifically? Why at this time?
The operation is not an operation that took off between one day to another. There is a preparation behind it, and this preparation requires months, not only weeks. And it is obvious that they have allies on the ground it is obvious that the intelligence services, more than one, and here I'm referring to the American and the Israelis, who worked together for this attack. And it is obvious that has been a follow-up on Fakhrizadeh, knowing his movement, how he visits his parents, his parents-in-law every month, and they follow him. And they also have the means to set up a car bomb and then have a hit team just attacking the convoy. So the reason why they killed Fakhrizadeh is just a simple show-off by Netanyahu, who is offering it to Mohammed bin Salman, who said previously that he wants to move the battle into Iran on the Iranian territory, and also to say that I have a long arm and I can hit objective or individual when I want. Now, that's not going to change anything. Iran can do the same, but I'm sure the word reaction will not be the same. If Israel is coming to Iran and killing a civilian, I think any country in the world can go to Israel and do exactly the same, and that will be a simple tit for tat. Everybody is violating the international law. There is no more international law standing and holding, and everybody can do the same.
Elijah, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time. Regardless what one thinks, this assassination of Mohsen Fakhrizadeh was a terrorist attack. That much is clear. And if the United States and Israel are behind this, which seems extremely likely given their past actions, if these countries that pretend to be liberal democracies and subscribe to international law and international conventions and claim to be fighting terrorism are then going ahead and committing acts of terrorism themselves because it favors their national or regional interests, this is outrageous. And the lack of condemnation from Western governments, the lack of widespread